I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller. Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast for Friday, October 20th, 2017. This is Wade Keller, editor of PW Torch and host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One, introducing today's best of PW Torch Livecast selection. Every Friday, I handpick a show from our archives to present to you in case you missed it, in case you're a newer listener of the livecast or want to relive some of our top shows, including big name interviews and reactions and analysis to some of pro wrestling's biggest matches, biggest events, and biggest news stories. Today, it's a continuation of last week with Jim Ross, an interview from May 2nd, 2014. It's the first time I interviewed him on the livecast, and it went about 4 hours. This is the middle portion, about an hour and a half of that, and Jim talks about a lot, what he misses about WWE, the feeling he had driving away from WWE headquarters the first time, the relief he felt, what he misses most, major health changes he made, and why he believes he understands business, the dangers of wrestling promotions getting away from fundamentals, what bugs him about the This Is Awesome chance by fans, what WWE alternative groups are getting wrong, what about ROH impresses him, but what he really wishes was different, the art of wrestling announcing, his views on Daniel Bryan's push, and more. It's a good one. Bruce Mitchell joins me on this interview, and you'll want to stay tuned for it. Check out last week's beginning of this interview if you missed it, and also, I just interviewed Jim Ross last week for 2 hours, a brand new interview for October 2017 with Jim talking about his new autobiography, Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling. So if you want to get an update on Jim Ross, I encourage you to check that out. That is not here at the PW Torch Livecast. You have to subscribe to my show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which 4 days a week provides new shows exclusively over at Podcast One. So just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or whatever app you use on your Android device or Apple device, or you can go right to podcastone.com and search Wade Keller, and it'll bring the show up. So if you're not subscribing to that show, new interviews every week, including Ted DiBiase next week, but we also cover Raw and SmackDown, and the old flagship, the midweek flagship, is now part of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast 4 days a week lineup. So again, if you haven't subscribed yet, be sure you do, and then you can catch my shows 4 days a week over there. But now, on to the Best of PW Torch Livecast with Jim Ross. If you missed it yesterday, Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek had your post-impact show, and tomorrow it's the Deep Dive with Rich Fan. And then Sunday night following TLC with major changes in that lineup due to a very serious situation breaking out, which I talked about in today's VIP Wade Keller Hotline. Roman Reigns out, Kurt Angle in, the main event, and Bray Wyatt out, and AJ Styles in against Finn Balor. Major changes on that show, and Pat McNeil and Greg Parks have you covered Sunday night right here at PW Torch Livecast. You can stream the show live right after TLC ends at pwtorchlivecast.com, or you can listen on demand on our feed. Just search PW Torch if you haven't subscribed yet to this, the PW Torch Livecast. Here we go with the best of PW Torch Livecast, Jim Ross from May of 2014. All right, Jim, thanks for staying with us on the other side of the music here on the VIP After Show. Bruce, you've got to be You've been very patient. We've taken so many calls and email questions and Twitter comments and all the plugs. What do you want to ask Jim Ross?
Well, I'm just curious, Jim, talk about where you are in your life right now. You know, the big adjustment of leaving WWE and having more time at home. Just talk about where you are now.
I'm in a real good place, Bruce. I'm very happy. You know, I've tried to one door closes, and this I got to learn this years ago from I learned so much from a lot of the old school wrestlers when I would ride in a car. Actually, I was the youngest in the car, so I drove, and they generally were in my vehicle so I could get the 2 cents a mile, which supplemented my $25 to $40 a day earnings. So the 2 cents a mile from a couple of three guys was significant in the big picture. And I learned so much there, but I have really, with that door closing and from their deal, it's like I had they would have a bad experience in one territory and then move to another and everything would get better. And so that's kind of been my experience. The door closed at WWE, and within a month, let's say, I think it was even quicker than that, I'd already had a meeting with the agency group in New York City, set up by Barry Bloom. I had a meeting with Live Nation. I got an offer to do the podcast on Podcast One. I got Fox started communicating with me, and then Barry out there in L.A. cut the deal with Fox. So I'm really at a good place. You know, I actually quit smoking in January, which was a good thing.
Jim, congratulations on that.
Yeah,
that
thanks.
That is great. That's
yeah, I go to the gym about 5 or 6 days a week. It's just about a mile from my house. A lot of cardio. So I think I'm trying to watch. I've limited, you know, nobody's going to hear this stuff. You know, I've limited dairy consumption, watching the sugar intake. So I'm actually trying to do better things for my health. I'm not in a stressed out world anymore. All the things that I'm doing, Bruce, I like to do, and I'm doing them by choice, not by because they were assigned to me or this is your new role, this is your new job or whatever. I like being able to do everything that I'm involved in. The podcast, I don't have to leave. I don't have to get on an airplane to do the podcast. When I write for FoxSports.com, I don't have to leave my house. And the Fox thing is probably going to provide some more opportunities going forward that we'll talk about at another time. But they don't look at me like I'm painted so vividly with a pro wrestling color that I can't be anything else.
Mm.
They're a young, exciting management team, and they have some ideas for me that we'll see how it works out as time goes on. But I'm having fun with it. So I'm really in a good place. I miss sometimes not being in the day to day, but that lessens each and every week. So I think that I knew that it was the right decision when WWE and I parted ways, because it was the most enjoyable ride from Stanford to LaGuardia I'd ever experienced, I could remember.
Yeah.
I just didn't feel like I had any pressure on me anymore. I felt like the weight of the world was lifted off my shoulders. And I'm not blaming them. I think I took myself too seriously sometimes. And, you know, I wasn't as open-minded as I probably should have been on occasion. So I removed a lot of stress from me after that meeting with Vince, and I've been feeling really good ever since. And some of these lifestyle changes were, you know, I hope they let me stay around a little longer. When both parents die at 64 and you are 62, you can't help but not think of your own mortality.
Yeah.
It's not an anxiety issue. It's not I'm not having panic attacks, nothing like that. It's just that lingering thought in the back of your head that, you know, hey, pal, you know, mom and dad died at 64. You're 62. Why don't you do some things that might keep you around a little longer? So that's kind of what I've done, and everything's good. Life is very good here in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a few minutes ago if you ever think you'd be that you'd rather still be announcing Raw. I'm not saying there aren't mixed feelings, but after hearing everything you just said, I've got to think, as tough as it is to say, in the sense that it was something you were so good at and you really enjoy doing, despite all the challenges that environment created, I just sounds like quitting smoking, getting in shape, getting to do some other things, and like you talked about that cab ride, it just sounds like you're absolutely at peace with, understandably, some confliction about just not being able to do Raw anymore, but you're really at peace with the way things have gone the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah, I am. I'm very and I'm not, you know, there's no scoop here in regard, well, you know, JR is still mad at Vince. I never was mad at Vince. You know, I have strong opinions on how the business, how I like the business to be executed. I also have strong opinions on how I like the play calling to be at Oklahoma University. You know, I have strong opinions on the Oklahoma City Thunder playing better defense and getting an inside offensive presence. I have a lot of opinions. Doesn't mean all of them are right. It just means I have a definitive view on certain on various topics. I think that I've had a chance to really be mentored by a lot of very smart guys in the wrestling business and be around a lot of brilliant minds in 40 years. And I believe that I understand the business. That may sound egocentric, but I believe that I do, and that's why we talked earlier about the promotions are getting away from fundamentals. Yeah. And they're making it harder for their talent to get over and stay over because they just simply are not executing the fundamental processes that you have when you have a protagonist and antagonist situation. And anybody that says that they're, well, you're way behind, it's not that way, there is that little line is thinner than it's ever been, and there's all these shades of gray. Well, then, you know, I know when Oklahoma goes on the road, and I go with them, when OU goes on the road, let's say to Baylor, Oklahoma's the heel. And there's a smaller group of Oklahoma fans because the universities give you fewer tickets for the visitors, understandably so. Same thing in Norman. When they come out of the tunnel in Norman, they're the most over baby faces on earth. But the next week, they could go on the road, and they're the heels. There are heels and baby faces in virtually every entity. And so I don't buy that. And if there weren't heels and baby face issues, then why wouldn't the NFL teams just take their show on the road and go barnstorming?
Oh, totally. I went to the Minnesota Wild game, Game 6, against Colorado Avalanche Monday night. It's one of the rare times I haven't watched Raw live, and was in this spectacular hockey arena that is the XL Energy Center, and an amazing crowd. And obviously there was a baby face that night, and that was Minnesota Wild. I will take that experience, and it would be great. I mean, it would be great to go to Chicago or St. Louis and watch Chicago and St. Louis play, but that game would be full of shades of gray because I'd be admiring the goaltender on one side, but admiring Kane's great play on the offense on the other side, and on and on, and I would be kind of split in my allegiance. I'd enjoy the art of hockey, the craftsmanship of the players, and it'd be fun to watch the drama unfold. But nothing compared to being a Wild fan for all the reasons that I've invested in that team and wanting to see them win. It's different, and that's where shades of gray, like you said, Jim, would be the NFL taking the show on the road, and protagonist antagonist doesn't mean that a character can't have moments of where morally they're a little bit maybe cross a line that they regret or shouldn't have, or that Bob Backlund would not have. But in the end, you want that heat from a babyface being cheered. And the thing that's so weird is someone on Twitter just said, and maybe you saw it too in the background, Jim, during the show, responding to you and me, going, it's not 1980 anymore, guys, get with the times. And it does seem like, and Bruce and I, you and I talk about this on the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show often, and on the live cast, it seems like such a headwind of against common sense, and it has to be something you saw evolve, even with Vince McMahon himself. And that's a question that I want to ask you very specifically is, did Vince McMahon change over the years when it came to this? And if so, what do you think caused him to move away from a stronger heel babyface structure to his company and his storylines?
I think he has changed over the years in that regard. And, you know, if you're in the Vince McMahon camp, you can say, well, he's grown. He's evolved. And he's gone from a regional territory promoter to this pro wrestling sports entertainment czar, Impresario, that's, you know, it's got the the biggest operation of its genre in the entire world. So I think it's inevitable that he was going to have some changes, and he was going to change. I think that the fact that his company has grown so much, it keeps taking away time from that core product. You know, I remember when I was there, he and I would work together at his house every Saturday without fail, because he just couldn't get all of his work done. He'd be the chairman of WWE through the week, and then on Saturdays we would try to catch up with either booking house show cards or working on TV or payroll. And so he's had to change to keep up with the workload because he's relentless with his work ethic. There's nobody I've ever worked for that works harder than him, without question. But I think that he's looking at more of the business, more of kind of divest itself of the old principles, because he wants to kind of reinvent the wheel, it seems. So I think that he has changed some. You know, Vince is the greatest promoter that I've ever been around as far as vision and things of that nature. But I've been around a lot of guys. I've been blessed. I've been around a lot of guys that were brilliant wrestling people. I mean, when Vince had the Pat Patterson era, where Pat was coming up with finishes and ideas and booking things, that was really beneficial for the company. Pat's contributions are oftentimes overlooked because he's in his 70s now and he's not active, but he was a big-time contributor. And J.J. Dillon had a huge role that he performed very admirably. He doesn't get the credit for that after he left abruptly there in the mid-90s. So, and I think that I helped Vince some, you know, with the wrestling logic. I don't know. I know that Triple H has got a great wrestling mind, but I think Triple H is having to play by Vince's rules right now. And maybe that game changes some when Triple H is calling the shots and calling the plays. Maybe they run a different offense, so to speak.
When you say maybe the game changes, I want to have you predict if Triple H would shift somewhat dramatically, because I think that's a really intriguing and important question. And you have some insight in that. You've seen Triple H over there. Do you, more than maybe, do you think probably Triple H would go to some of the things we've been talking about in terms of more antagonist, protagonist, and what other things might he do different than Vince, do you think?
I don't know if dramatic is the way to describe it. Might be. Here's what I would say. If you go back and look at the early days of NXT at Full Sail, and look at how that show was written and produced, if you can't see a distinguishable difference in that broadcast and any other WWE broadcast, then you're really missing a point or the boat, as they would say. So I think that that would give you that would be a good way of looking at Triple H's likes, dislikes, philosophies, tendencies, things, because every booker has their likes and dislikes and their tendencies and things of that nature. You know, if I was booking today, you'd have to, as a creative person, you would have to really, really twist my arm to get a count out or a disqualification finish.
Yeah.
It would have to be very dramatic and to be used very sparingly. I just believe that you move the needle more when your favorite loses or wins, and you don't have the you have the kind of a loose-ended finish that are so overused now that they don't mean anything. Or mean much. I guess that's what I didn't know, was the overstatement. But I think that Triple H will have a different slant on things, but I think that's natural.
Oh, of course.
No one's going to come in and be Vince. There's only going to be one Vince, for better or for worse. It's like I said about my own work. For better or for worse, I was being myself. For better or for worse, Vince is Vince, period. And he's built a hell of a business. He's made a lot of guys a lot of money. For that, they and me, all of us should be thankful. He's helped us establish a better quality of life. But he is challenging to work with. He's a workaholic. You know, has amazing zest and zeal for the business. But I do think that he has changed philosophically to where it has distanced his philosophy and mine are farther apart now when I watch Raw than they they have been, and he's not going to relent and go reverse it, because he's going to think that going back to the fundamentals, where you have finishes and definitive winners and losers, where you have a few rules so the heels can break them, would be regressing. And it would be too much, as he would say, wrestling, R-A-S-S-L-I-N. And he didn't want to be a wrestling promoter. He wants to be a sports entertainment producer.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Who's been in his ear that won out and has been behind that philosophy that you just described, that Vince is on right now? Who won out in terms of, and who roots for him genuinely, that this is the right approach to take behind the scenes?
I don't know if there's a right answer to that. I would think that Bonnie Hammer might have something to do with that, maybe. They're at USA, because she's a big, she's not a wrestling, pro wrestling aficionado, but she's a very brilliant programmer, and USA is very profitable, and so she's very successful. It's judged by the dollars and the what falls to the bottom line, and she's done an amazing job for NBC Universal there. But I know that she always wanted the WWE to be more episodic and to have more characters and to be a little bit more soap opera oriented, and to bring out the, when our roster that we had were guys that could talk. All of DX could talk. All the guys in DX were pretty good talkers. Austin was a good talker. Rock was a good talker. We had a bunch of mainline players that could talk. And so the talking aspect of where there's less minutes of wrestling and more minutes of talking involved, people didn't really get too frustrated, because the talk was pretty compelling.
Mm-hmm.
And again, those guys were largely given bullet points, and they went out and did their own thing. So that's a big element. Now, if you go to the NXT and listen or watch NXT, a lot of their promos, at least when I was going down there, were bullet pointed, and the talents did their promos. They didn't have to memorize lines. They're not trained actors. You can't give somebody a script the afternoon of their performance and expect them to win an Oscar, so to speak. It's not fair to the talent. It's not fair to the creative process. You can't just hand somebody, here's your promo for tonight. Very few people can pull that off. And so I think that there may be some network, but I just pressure on Vince to change. But I just think it's just, he wants to keep evolving, and he wants to keep growing. And I think some people mistake not steering. Some things need to be, the course need to be steered and not changed, and change other things around it. Going to HD or going to more cameras or having instant replay and more technical, more production values. And nobody does vignettes any better than WWE. They're wonderful. Adam Panucci, that works in TV, and all those guys, they're brilliant. So they do some things really, really good. But fundamental wrestling stuff, he seems to be somewhat resistant on things that he would consider to be too old school.
Yeah, a good slice of cheesecake, it doesn't need to evolve. It's just, there's just certain things you can change other things about the atmosphere of wrestling, but a good wrestling match with protagonist antagonist just clicks.
I look at it like when Coca-Cola went to the new Coke.
Yeah, yeah,
it didn't work.
And you know what? There's just a can of Coke. It just works like the can. You don't need to turn it into a triangle, and you don't need to put the label upside down, and you don't need to attach a silly straw to it. It's like there's certain things that people, when they want a Coke, they want a Coke.
Right.
And when people want to watch wrestling because they want to see guys fight, and you get to control it, you get to pick who your star is. Dana White doesn't, for the most part. And you get to have the exact finish that will make the most money, and you get to have the match last exactly how long you want it to last, and you get the finish you want. That's the core. And I just, messing with that, it's frustrating. I know it is for you, Jim. I hear your commentary. I see what you've written and heard what you talked about. And Bruce, you're with me. Bruce, do you have anything to add to this conversation, or do you want to steer things a different way?
I just think that I think it's storytelling basis, and it transcends wrestling. And I don't like when people try to frame the argument as old versus new, or as growing versus not growing.
Or evolving,
Or evolving. I just think there's storytelling tropes that work that go all the way back to, Greek mythology. And the wrestling that I've seen that was very successful had strong characterizations, and it was nuanced and had little things that really counted for something and drew people in. And the things that we criticize that that are supposedly new, that the foundation, as Jim said, was just not built that well, and it doesn't work as well as you would think the top stuff should. So I mean, it's just that idea of this old versus new. I think it's effective storytelling versus not effective storytelling.
Yeah, it's such a frustrating argument. And you, Jim, I know you get exasperated on Twitter and your emails and people asking the same old questions and complaining about the same things. And I get the same feeling, and I know Bruce does. When is John Cena going to turn heel? And Shades of Grey and you're too old school, evolve. And, we all hear the same thing from a group. But hopefully at some point, what you, I, and Bruce, in this instance, we're not all three of us aren't going to agree on everything, but I think we are very much in lockstep together along with Steve Austin and some other really smart people in wrestling who have been in wrestling along with you and Steve Austin agree with us that it's just kind of gone in a weird direction. I do want to ask another question about Vince McMahon, and then I really want to get to a couple emails because I feel bad that I'm talking to you, but I got so much to talk about with you, and I want to hear so much of your thoughts on things. Vince McMahon as a person involved in his job, as you observed him the last 5 years that you worked there and were around him a lot, tell me a couple things about him that where he improved or changed for the better in terms of how he handled business and personal situations as you observed. And then talk about a couple ways in the last 5 years that maybe he kind of lost his way a little bit as a promoter, as a leader, as a boss, as a coworker. So, a little bit of good and a little bit of bad. How was he different the last 5 years you worked for him compared to, say, the first 5 years you worked for him?
Oh, I think, gosh, that's a hard question. I don't know if I even have an answer for it. As the company has grown, it has really affected his focus on certain projects, obviously, with anybody. Because he's a hands-on guy, and he's going to stay involved in every aspect of the business that he possibly can. From, everything kind of flows through him to one degree or another. And as the company has gotten bigger, he takes more of his time, and he certainly wouldn't want to. He wouldn't probably be crazy about talking about his age, but age affects all of us. Extra memory or recall or patience. Sometimes we get more patient the older we get. Sometimes we get less patient. So I think that, I think that he at times, he has been more open to experimentation or ideas creatively, but there are still, you got to stay within under his roof. If he can't venture out, he's not going to go back to old school wrestling. He's not going to do that. He just refuses to go there, and he wants to continue to build a brand. But there's where we have that difference of a philosophy. And as Bruce mentioned, it's not going back to wool tights. It's not going back to over the top ropes and automatic DQ. It's a matter of going back and reevaluating the fundamentals of the business. And why are these two guys wrestling? What is the personal issue that exists between wrestler A and wrestler B? Things like the agents and the guys that train, you got to teach guys to be aware of selling. Selling's the lost art. People always talk about Ricky Steamboat and Ricky Morton and guys like that they were great because they could sell. Dick Murdoch could sell great. And if they were that good, I remember moments of those three guys just really vibrantly. Selling is a fundamental skill of being a pro wrestler. And if you sell as a heel differently than you sell as a babyface. Babyfaces sell courageously. They're never giving up. there's a nuance, and there's a how do you sell as a babyface and how you sell as a heel, because a heel will sell in a cowardly way. He will, you know, he will look, his sell is different, body language, facial expression, it's an art. So that's my thoughts there. But, you know, as far as Vince is concerned, you know, he's really pretty much steered the course. I keep waiting for him. I think that he's maybe getting there now of where he's delegating a little bit more.
Yeah.
But he which is imperative that he do. And he's got some really good people around him, by and large. You know, I think that Paul Levesque's going to be a tremendous guy to run that company someday. I don't like to think about it because the unfortunate issue there is that he won't run that company while as long as Vince is alive.
Interesting, yeah.
And I just don't I don't want to forecast that whatsoever because
yeah.
you know
yeah.
Again people. And I get it on Twitter. I get it on the Q&A's at my website. You know, the first time you don't, somebody finds out you don't agree with them, or you disagree with someone in wrestling, there's automatically an issue, or it's opinion. I've read the Torch for years. I don't agree with everything you write. I don't agree with all your reviews, but I damn sure didn't hold it personally against you or go on a vendetta. But that's just. You're writing an opinion. You're editorializing something. You're not doing a box score. You're not computing a batting average. You're not writing a sports story about first and tens, and you're not writing a post game story on the Vikings' victory over the Bears or something. You're writing about a theatrical presentation that you're looking at as a critic, and or that's one word anyway, and like you would a film. And but you may not like certain elements of it, and I might, but all I can do is we can agree to disagree at times.
Yeah.
So this business is really it's an emotional business, and people get really sometimes too wrapped up in it. So that's like Bruce asked me earlier about how I was in my place. Hey, I am great, and I have no ill will toward McMahon or the company. There are things I see that I wish I wasn't seeing, but again, they come back to my personal philosophy of how the business should be executed and that in-ring product. It's not about how the locker room demeanor is because I'm not there. It's not about how the payoffs are because I don't know what the guys are earning and I'm not making the payoffs anymore. It's not about how the cards are booked because I'm not doing that either. I don't go to house shows. So, what I do see and I can experience is the product on TV. And there are some things on TV that don't work for me. But that's with every I don't think there's a harder working little group of talent than the guys that work for Ring of Honor. They work their ass off. As a matter of fact, they work way too hard.
Yeah.
They don't work smart as they should. And somewhere along the way, they need to have someone needs to give them a clinic on how you can make your matches better by doing enough so the audience can follow along and process what they're seeing. You know, I admire Kevin Kelly so much. Well, you should go over to announce at Ring of Honor. Well, they got a good announcer. And I'm not interested in going to Ring of Honor under any circumstance or any other company on a weekly basis for that matter. But Kevin has to work his ass off because he's on a TV show and he and his partner are talking wall to wall. It's like they're trying to do a 60-second commercial in 30 seconds that never ends because they're trying to keep up with everything they're seeing on their monitor.
Yeah.
They're seeing too much. Some things just need to be left alone, and some things. But the one thing that would help cure their issue is for the booker there or whoever's laying out the matches to use a little bit more common sense and judgment in how the matches are laid out. You can't. I saw where you tweeted today about my had a little rant about the this is awesome the chant.
Yeah.
I don't have a issue with people chanting this is awesome, but it's generally because it's as a result of a high spot. It's as a result of something that was dangerous. More often than not, it's not for good, solid wrestling. in my view, my opinion. Now, again, that's an old-school guy talking. But the Ring of Honor guys have got to slow down. If they slowed down and still did, and sprinkled in those sensational high spots they do, but they sold more, they would be so much better off than just being wall-to-wall spot, 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 spot. I watched a match the other day with Kevin Steen, and who I like, and another, I can't, gosh, his name slips in my mind, is another guy built kind of like him, you know, the body type. And they did some amazing things. And if you just took them into little intervals in a highlight reel, they would be, you say, boy, this is spectacular. Mm-hmm. But when you put it all together and they, from start to finish, they didn't stop doing them. And then they didn't sell much. And
you talking about Adam Cole?
No, it wasn't Adam Cole. It was a bigger guy, like a thicker guy. But the point is, no matter who it was, they're doing too much. And I didn't get the chance to feel that the pain or the suffering or the selling of one of those guys. And I didn't know, and neither one of them were doing, I didn't know who was the heel and who was the babyface.
Yeah.
I didn't have any idea. I didn't know who I should root for or who I shouldn't root for. I had no clue. Because neither one, they're, again, Ring of Honor is like everybody else. Seemingly, everything is legal.
Right.
And every match has got, not every match, that's an overstatement, but a lot of matches, too many matches, have weapons and chairs and interference and, multiple fight over here and a skirmish outside. And I just don't, I don't get it.
Bruce, you wrote about this in this last week in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter this week, actually, about kind of the end of the hardcore era is clearly upon us in terms of how those shows are drawing in Philadelphia and especially. And it does seem that there's been too much of promoters and wrestlers and companies that are trying to be an alternative looking backwards and trying to recreate something in the past as opposed to what Paul Heyman did when he created ECW, or he didn't create it, but he certainly created it as the force that it became under Todd Gordon, doing something that had not been done. Like Bruce, you said in your column, Paul Heyman didn't go hire Jim Brunzell and Greg Gagne, the High Flyers, to be on a show. Not that he didn't have some nostalgia acts, but what made ECW identifiable is that it was something that had not been seen before, and he knew at that moment in time this was the niche that existed as an alternate to what WWE was doing. And it's been kind of sad, and Bruce, I want you to comment on it before throwing to Russ. It has been kind of sad watching wrestling and not seeing whatever Jeff Jarrett does. I'm not particularly hopeful based on the little clues I've seen, but I'm open-minded. But in TNA and Ring of Honor especially TNA, I should say, and Ring of Honor too, not coming up with those new ways of doing things or putting a new spin on it or finding that niche that was in contrast to what WCW and WWF were doing is what Heyman did. And we haven't seen that. And I guess, Bruce, your comments on that, and then you can throw to Jim for a little more reaction on that too.
Well, I just wrote about it, and I think that style has been dead for years and years, and I just thought, but those two shows that just went very wrong, very badly, two weekends in a row, was worth saying, this isn't working, it's not going to work, and it's time for the chaos that calls in people's lives to stop. But I think it's really tough to find that niche now. I think there was a niche to be found with ECW and with Paul Heyman, and ultimately it didn't work. But now you have wrestling fans. Most wrestling fans think of wrestling as this huge production, and it's very hard to compete with that. And there's a limited amount of stars now that are in the prime of their career. They all work for WWE. You put those two things together, and it's a tough, tough deal. But I very much agree with Jim about selling and about not giving people a chance. I think there's something wrong. My problem with this is awesome is it's a review of the match. It's like a movie critic, or it's like what we do when we write up a review of a show while you're watching the match instead of you being involved in the story of the match. That's a real different thing. When I'm watching a great movie, I'm jumping up and down in my seat because I'm excited about what's happening to these main characters. I'm not going, if it's a really good movie, I'm not going, look what the director did over in with that shot, or look at how they set that up. I'm immersed in experience.
Bruce, I'll put it this way. You're not going to sell out a movie theater full of people critiquing the directing or the stunt work. You're going to fill up a movie theater with people who are invested in the antagonist and the protagonist and the story that's being told. So there always will be a pocket of fans who appreciate wrestling on a different level or are looking at it through a different lens. The thing is, and this is what you get in arguments on Twitter about with people, is that doesn't fill domed stadiums. That doesn't fill 15,000-seat arenas. There aren't enough people who are going to be interested in wrestling in that way, where wrestlers should be catering to fans who are going to give them that reaction. And I think that, Jim, that's the argument you're making on your podcast, is if you're catering to the fans who are reviewing your moves and the execution of the moves, you're limiting your audience to 5%, arguably, of the grand total of people you should be aiming for.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
Yeah, you can't narrowcast, and it still goes back to having a athletic presentation that can allow me to suspend my disbelief, and again I do that when if the wrestlers themselves become more detail oriented, more sound fundamentally, then it gives the announcers the opportunity to tell a very different story. And when announcers talk right up into a false finish, and the false finish doesn't have any drama, then you start losing me. Because if the false finish isn't important to the broadcasters, I have no idea why it should be important to the viewers.
I love hearing you talk about announcing the same way I love hearing Steve Austin talk about critiquing a wrestling match or the art of a wrestling match. Because you see you react to the announcing because of your years of doing it and mastering in your style, and with great critical praise for good reason, the approach you took. And you knew why you did things, and you didn't do it just randomly or because it felt like the right thing to do. At some point, you started, studying the greats and then forming your own style, and you can articulate why certain things work. And I'm just throwing it as an aside. I love hearing you talk about the art of wrestling.
The announcers today are, they get Cole and JBL in particular get a lot of unfair criticism, in my view, because their style is a style that the most devout of the fans are not turned on to. They don't like it. But the issue there is they're doing exactly how they're instructed to broadcast. And their director or whatever, their producer is telling them what to do and how to approach it. And that's discussed in the production meetings. And they know what the style is going to be or what is expected of them, and that's what they do. So they get an unfair criticism for that, but they're not. People are craving a different style. I've said many, many times, and I use it in my show, my one man show, that the wrestlers make music, and the announcers provide the lyrics. And sometimes an average song that has a catchy lyric is passable. It's okay. Meaning that some announcers can take an average match and make it better than it actually is by their commentary.
Yeah,
we've all heard that from different guys. The issue is that when you get a great piece of music, the lyrics have got to fit the whole pace, the tone, the beat. It's all got to measure up, and it all starts with the music. It doesn't start with the commentary. So I just don't. I think that. If I have a wrestling show on, I can find myself either watching it or fading away and getting on the iPad or reading the paper, today's paper, whatever the hell it may be, and then I will look up when I hear a tone change and the inflection changes. And so that doesn't say, well, it's a screaming match, so who screams the loudest is going to get over. It's a matter of tone and delivery. And sometimes the when WWE announcers go into their hushed tones, it feels contrived. It doesn't feel natural. And the same thing, as I said earlier, you can't, every false finish can't be the bottom of the ninth home run call.
Yeah.
That won't work. You're crying wolf. So, but that still comes back to the philosophical thing. You know, I just don't know what, I couldn't probably do Ring of Honor very good because they're working too fast, and I'm going to lay out some, and I'm not emotionally invested in what they do. I really admire the kids that work there and how hard they try and their announced staff and how they do things with less budget and all that stuff. So it's not against the wrestlers whatsoever. Same thing with TNA. TNA has got they need to blow up their creative and their direction, and they need to start over. You know, it's like
yes, they do.
It's like if I was the owner of I use a lot of sports analogies, and that's, so I apologize for that. But if the TNA was a football franchise, and they got the number one pick in the draft because they had the worst record, you had bad results, worst record in the league. More than likely, you're going to get you're going to have a new philosophy, a new coaching staff. Now, I'm not saying they need to clean house with their administration, and John Gaborik's a friend of mine, and he's got a very challenging job there. But with the culture of the locker room and the philosophy of how they deliver and how they present their product, but they don't have a bad roster. For those that believe that there's a lack of talent in TNA, I would argue that point. I think they have a core of some really talented guys, but they need to get back to what that core does best and give me longer matches, give me more two-segment matches, give me an occasional two-out-of-three-fall match. I know that's going to really roll some eyes now. I've gone from the 80s back to the 70s, but here's the deal. A three-fall match is perfect for television because you can have a fall, go to commercial break, and come back and start the second fall, and it's episodic. It's like a tournament. You know, the little intercontinental tournament that WWE had actually made the IC title a little bit more relevant because it created an awareness, and it was episodically produced because it's a single elimination tournament.
Yeah.
It's organically episodic. So tournaments are not a bad vehicle to use once or twice a year on Monday Night Raw or SmackDown. But Raw probably better because it's live. But TNA they've got to go back and reevaluate and play to their strengths. Are their strengths really the fact they have a roster of great actors or great comedians? No, that's not their strength. They have guys that can cut wrestling promos and do some nice things in that regard without question. And I'd like to hear what they do if they just left to their own devices to a certain degree. But boy, they're on the wrestling side, they could be a whole lot better. And if I were them, I would be chasing something to try to spike the ratings because they're going to be, from what I understand, reading your newsletter and other things online, their rights fee thing with Spike is coming up this fall.
Yeah.
Nobody knows where they're going to be and what leverage they have to negotiate. The fact that their ratings they still do about 1 million viewers a week, that's not going to get it. You got to show growth, and if you're not growing, and if you're running this offense, and Bruce knows, and being living in basketball country, if your offense is not working and you're not winning, you got to change the damn offense. You got to figure out how to win, and what they're doing, they're not winning. So, and it's not, and people are gonna say, well, JR, sure, he was hard on TNA with Wade Keller and Bruce Mitchell. Well, I'm just telling you how I feel. I want all these wrestling companies to stay in business. They support our passion. You want them to stay in business. You made a living off this thing. I've made a great living off of wrestling. I want to see more guys work, more guys make money, and more diversity in the business, and more competition. If you're a fan, really a fan, you want everybody's company to do really, really good. And I just see little things that Ring of Honor is always going to be third or fourth or whatever. Because of their budget, and Sinclair won't spend any money. their lighting looks like it's shot in a garage by the sophomore class, the sophomore drama class.
In 1995.
Yeah, it's bad. And yeah. They got Sinclair's got lots of money, and you damn sure got money enough to buy a lighting grid. And little things like that are unacceptable when you're owned by a broadcast concern. Or do they not care? Have they lost their buzz? Is it just the fact that, hey, we'll be all right? We're producing first-round programming. We don't need to get any better. They're doing fine just as it is. If so be it. But I can't see why that can't improve. But TNA's biggest issue is they have to change the creative direction. And one of the deals, trying to make movies, little mini movies. This thing with Jeff Hart, the Willow Search, or whatever the hell that was. Yeah. I just tuned it out. I went to another channel. I stopped watching because I was embarrassed. You know, when you know guys and you know the business, you know, one of the worst feelings you can have is to get embarrassed for somebody you know.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I felt. I thought, God, why are they doing this? And they're putting Dixie. Dixie was going to be the female Vince.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about it is McMahon was one hell of a heel. He was a great performer, and he was a perfect foil for Stone Cold. And a lot of Stone Cold's success, and Steve will tell you, I'm sure he probably did when he was on your show, Vince was a great heel. He was great to work with. He was easy to hate. I said that about Paul Heyman. And people think I'm shooting or something. Paul Heyman's a friend. He's a good friend. But his character on television is easy to dislike. He's the only villainous redeeming factor that Lesnar and Cesaro have, because they don't cheat. What physical characteristics does Brock Lesnar do that would make him a heel? He doesn't do heel promos,
yeah.
And he doesn't work like a heel. So yeah. Why is he a heel? Because he's working with who you perceive to be a babyface from time to time, like Undertaker is a babyface. And Lesnar works with him, so Lesnar's going to get the booze at WrestleMania. But what else does Lesnar do to become a heel? What has Cesaro done to be a heel? Well, they associate with Paul Heyman. Man, that's flimsy booking to me. They got to change, you know, and maybe they don't need to be heel. Maybe they both need to be baby faces. I don't know.
Yeah. But the Cesaro booking is curious, Jim.
It's curious, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to figure it out is challenging. Oh, I wanted to ask you one more thing about TNA, and then we hit our quota. We have a quota here at PW Torch for TNA Talk. I'm joking.
Right.
But Eric Young winning the title. When you saw that live or heard about it happening, whichever the case was, what kind of first reaction did you have to that?
Well, first of all, I met Eric Young. TNA had a show in Oklahoma City a few years ago, when our barbecue restaurant was open here in Norman, and some other guys came down and had lunch, and he was with that group. Real nice guy, very personable, very polite. So, and I think he's a good hand. But I thought, obviously, that this is too much like Daniel Bryan to make me comfortable, because you got the classic smaller size guy, overachieving, and even down to the beard. It just was too same to be a coincidence. It didn't feel right. And it has nothing to do with Eric Young, in my view. It has to do with what's that long, slow burn booking on again, off again with Daniel Bryan and WWE and that whole presentation of him. And then Eric Young comes, it's just a little too convenient. And so I didn't think it did. I don't think it did anything great for Eric Young, and it certainly didn't do anything great for TNA just because of the circumstance. But I think Eric Young is a good hand.
Yeah,
and
it's it was kind of unfair to him, Jim. Sort of like, well, when Ronnie Garvin won the NWA World Title, it just didn't work, and it wasn't a dig at Ronnie Garvin. It just wasn't the role for him, you know, and the circumstance of that, Bruce. You know, inside and out, we've talked about a lot, and there's a lot of reasons it's not a great analogy.
Politics.
Yeah.
Have issues, you know.
In the timing of him being the guy at that moment, you know, to be challenging Flair. But with Young, it was unfair, and it's what you say, Jim, about, you know, him being a nice guy, a good hand. I think he's good at the comedy. He cracks me up. I think he's got good natural timing. But he wasn't booked to be a world championship level wrestler. Daniel Bryan wrestles and was accepted and embraced by fans as a guy who could win a world title and represent the world title. And obviously that's been the crux of the storyline, is he a corporate face of a company? But nobody argues that he is in the ring credible and athletic in the way that you would want a world champion to be, and especially a guy who's undersized who could beat bigger guys believably. That's a trait that he has that, say, John Morrison wasn't able to pull off, just to grab, you know, a name of, you know, Brian looks like he's tough and bad. AJ has that too. It looks like he's a guy who can credibly beat bigger guys. Eric Young is an undersized guy with a beard, but he was cast and portrayed as a comedy figure, and fans who liked him didn't like him, quote, like that. You know, it's like, I like you, but I don't like you like that. With Eric Young, they didn't see him as a world champion.
Yeah, the preconditioning for Eric Young didn't set him up to be the world champion.
Yeah.
And that's not Eric Young's fault.
No, no. That's the thing. It's not fair. It's like you say about Cole and JBL. You can't blame them for the announcing as much as you have to blame the fact that what their tests they're given is what they're doing.
Absolutely, and it's all about production and casting, and you know, and some wrestling people don't want to hear those showbiz terms, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're put into position and you're cast in a role, sometimes it fits and sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, why would the decision makers at TNA make the decision to go with Eric Young, knowing exactly what we just discussed? He was a very skilled comedy act.
Yeah.
He was their Santino.
Yep.
And I don't think that, you know, you'd ever see McMahon, as controversial as he is to a lot of people, ever make Santino the WWE World Champion. I don't see that happening anytime soon. And of course, I might be wrong. And that's not a knock against Santino. He's very good at what they have cast him to do.
That's right.
You know, he's very good at that role. So it's interesting. But they need to. They have to make some changes, because it would be good to see as many. Everybody should have an identity, and I don't know what everybody's identity is. WWE, I get, because they're WWE, and so they're going to be they're the alpha male. But you know, where does everybody else stand in the business? You know, I was curious what Jeff Jarrett's going to do. You know, I haven't talked to him in years, but I don't have any ill will toward him, but I hope that he is successful, because again, it helps grow the genre, and the genre needs help growing in that regard. And I'm very, very concerned about, you know, the WWE has had a real good success thus far in the evolution of the Shield and the Wyatt family. Only one of those six guys started out brand new and got trained by WWE. They went to WWE finishing school, which is good. I'm not taking anything away from the guys that train in NXT. They do a good job. But the point is, I'm curious to see where the next Roman Reigns guys come in, the guys that are brand new and that have not had indie experience. Because all those other guys, Ambrose and Rollins, Rowan and Harper, Husky Harris, those guys all had they had time in front of a paying customer. They had live event time, and then they got into Florida and Orlando, and they got finished. They got refined, and tweaked, and then they got sent to WWE's main roster, and they underwent another metamorphosis, and another change, another evolution. No pun intended regarding Sunday.
Yeah.
So that's my biggest concern for the business is where who's going to be the next Wyatt family or the next Shield? Six talents that are come in and get some love. Where do they come from? For all the organizations, where do the new guys come from for Ring of Honor? Where do the new guys come from for TNA?
Jim, is there a cultural predisposition within WWE over the last 5, 10, 15 years to break away from the wrestling industry and being part of something bigger than themselves and see themselves and factually just be something completely detached and independent from where they came? In other words, the desire, whether it's overstated or not, to only have wrestlers at NXT that start and finish. Don't just finish, but start and finish their training in a WWE system. Is that part of the cultural desire corporately and within Vince McMahon, Triple H, Stephanie McMahon, Kevin Dunn, to not have to say, yeah, some of this talent that we make money from learned something outside of our auspices?
Well, I don't think so. I think, Darren Matthews, William Regal, is very valuable in the area of scouting all the indies. He facilitated Daniel Bryan and Cesaro. He got, the really underrated guy that had the long hair. It was down in NXT. That is kind of the darling of the indies. Got cut.
Oh, Chris Hero.
Yeah, Chris.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to disrespect.
No, that happens all the time.
I really like Chris. He's a really bright kid. A young kid. But you know what I mean. But Regal got him in, and he had just done a few of the things they wanted him to do, he would have been playing on the main roster right now as well. I think. Just my opinion.
Fitness, physical appearance, Jim,
I think he didn't find good enough success in a strength and conditioning program. I'm not saying he blew up or didn't have the stamina. I think they just wanted him to refine his look a little bit in a through nutrition and the gym.
Yeah.
I don't think that he was comfortable with all that. And so they agreed to part ways. But he's a real not good guy. I very much hope I get to see him again sometime because I like him, and I think he could have done very well in WWE. Let's not forget CM Punk was an indie guy.
Yeah.
So he went about as far as you could go. So I don't think there's any prejudice against the indies. Pardon me, but I think there is they want a certain look. Now Daniel Bryan broke that mold. He's got over despite being under 6 feet tall. Didn't bother me. I think talent comes in all sizes.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Bruce, anything you want to add to anything we've talked about or some new subject too?
No, I'm fine.
Jim, do you have time for a couple email questions? I don't want to take up your time if you got to ride off in the sunset, as Austin would say, but I wouldn't mind getting to some emails too if you got a few minutes.
No, we could do them. I just want to say I think it's imperative, and a lot of guys think WWE should just recruit the indies.
Yeah.
And they do recruit the indies.
Yeah.
But you're foolish if you don't recruit out of college. You're a fool. And that's Jerry Briscoe does an amazing job of recruiting the amateur wrestling world. I know he's Tony Nelson there at University of Minnesota is one of his on his top of his list right out there. And I don't know that Tony Nelson's going to sign right away because I think he's waiting to see what the NFL is going to offer him during the draft process. Not necessarily getting drafted, but maybe getting a free agent deal to go to a team where he has a chance to play. And I don't even know what he's going to play, so I'm not versed in that. But I did watch him at the Nationals. I watched several of Briscoe's recruits at the Nationals in Oklahoma City, and his relationship with all these college coaches is absolutely phenomenal. When I first got into business, and all for years, there was a wall up between amateur wrestling and the pros, and the amateurs didn't want to have anything to do with the pros. Now Watts in Oklahoma had a little different deal because he was an amateur wrestler. Denny Hodges was an amateur wrestler. McGurk was an amateur wrestler, so they had a little different relationship in the state of Oklahoma with Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, two real good wrestling schools, by the way. So the fact that you got to go if you want to hunt, if you need to sign, if you go to go, like I wrote about this, if you're going to go big game hunting, you got to go where the big game are. And I believe that there's nothing better than a world-class athlete who has a big personality and has been a wrestling fan. If you can find all those things, you just increase your chances of finding a star tenfold. And he said, "Well, that's like finding a needle in a haystack." Exactly, it is. You got to find a lot. You got to sign a lot of guys. You go through a lot of talents because if you sign 100, maybe if you get one or two, if I sign 100 guys and they go through the process and I find two rocks, how bad am I doing? Not bad.
Yeah.
If I find one rock a year for 3 or 4 years, that's 4 or 5 rocks, 4 or 5 Austins. And you say, well, those guys are once in a generation guys. Well, they may be, but you still have to go look. And I think that WWE, the NFL has about 400 out of work players every at the beginning of football season that don't have a job. They're 22, 23, 24 years old. They're looking for a career. They've given up on their football dream, a lot of them. So consequently, those guys probably grew up as wrestling fans. I've met so many football players that have. Same thing with a college, going to colleges and hitting these colleges up to like any other recruiter, like AT&T or like Pitney Bowes or like any State Farm or whatever. A corporate recruiter going in and getting a relationship with the coaching staff, the strength coach, and the coaching staff of a football team. And because the water's a lot deeper with the football world than it is in amateur wrestling.
Yeah.
Because you got to have a roster is going to have you got 85 scholarship guys, 85. In wrestling, you got maybe 12 or 14, maybe. So there's got to be an organized effort made to go find big time athletic guys in a variety of shapes and sizes and ethnicities that you can talk with and you can meet and recruit. And you can find out about their personality, and it doesn't take but one conversation with a guy to find out if they've been a wrestling fan or not. That's easy. That's actually the easiest part of the whole deal. Who's your favorite wrestler? Oh, man, I don't know. I haven't watched it in years. Okay, you asked my question. So that's the deal. It worries me more for the business, where do the stars of tomorrow come? And I'm talking beyond the Wyatts and beyond the Shield. And there's some good guys down at NXT, but there's nothing WWE does more important than anything they do, and that is developing new stars. It makes everything run. It makes the network run. It makes the stock price go up because new stars equate to profits and success. And success begets success, and that's where it starts. So to me, and I'm a biased guy because I'm a talent guy, it's all about your players. It's all about your talent. And that's what wins games is talent. It's not a system. It's not a system thing. You heard about sports guys with coaches. Well, anybody could be successful in that system. That's bullshit. That ain't true.
Yeah.
Bruce, that'd be like saying, well, golly, anybody can be successful in Roy Williams' system. It's all about a system. Yeah, how about players? Players.
I saw that this year. I wanted to see more defense and faster, longer guys, and it wasn't there. It comes down to players. It comes down to – and in wrestling, it comes down to stars.
Comes down to building stars. And the thing about it is that they have such a good facility in Orlando and a good system that they're always going to be able to develop talent to go take a roster spot in the main roster. And I'm not demeaning their work, but they're good enough at what they do. It's actually a compliment. They're good enough at what they do that they're always going to be successful in getting talent to the main roster. I really believe that. But the magic is in the recruiting of the kid that you think has a chance.
Yes.
To be a WrestleMania main eventer.
It's what the San Antonio Spurs in the NBA get credited for. Is finding those gems deeper in the draft that allows them to renew their bench without having to overspend on hot free agents.
Yeah, we're recording this on Rock's birthday. He's 42 today, So for those of you who may listen later and get confused, his birthday is today. And today, of course, as we know, is the second day of May. So when I signed Rock and I saw what I believed to be a WrestleMania main event talent, as far as the look was concerned, articulate, smart, motivated. He looked the part. Now, I didn't know if he was going to be able to stay healthy. I didn't know if he was going to get distracted with, you know, what all the distractions you can encounter on the road or you know, in the profession, the business. Things I couldn't answer. There's no way I could answer. Well, he'll never get hurt. How you can't say that. You don't know. But what I could see, what I could evaluate, I thought was pretty damn good. And same thing when I when Briscoe started recruiting Brock Lesnar out of University of Minnesota, we could have signed Brock probably at the end of his junior year, but we didn't put the pressure on because Briscoe's one of his best friends in the world is a wrestling coach at University of Minnesota.
Ah, yeah.
They were roommates at OSU, Oklahoma State, back in the day. So we backed off of Brock. We knew he was interested, and we liked Shelton Benjamin. He was a graduate assistant. And so we were going to bring a package deal in. But the deal was, we're not going to bother. Shelton's going to go to school another year, be a GA, graduate assistant, and Brock has got a senior year to come back and win an NCAA title. So we're not going to screw with Coach Robinson. So, but when they were, quick as they were done, and we actually told Brock, hey, you know, if you come back next year and if you win the national championship, because he was a runner-up, I think, in junior year, you're going to be worth more money to us. You're going to make more money. So he won the national title, and he was ready to get the hell out of Minnesota, and all due respect to you, Wade, quick, he was ready to go south.
Yeah.
He was ready to start making money, bottom line.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we brought him and Shelton together so we keep Brock comfortable. Because he was a different kind of cat. My point is this. We had him come to a Raw, I think it was, or it might have been a pay-per-view, I'm not sure, in Minneapolis, his senior year. He's the first time I ever saw Vince McMahon go. When he saw him, McMahon made a beeline right to him. Because we had told Vince, one of our recruits is going to be here tonight, heavyweight in Minnesota. And Vince, you know, kind of left that up to us. And, you know, my track record at that time was fairly good. And so, you know, it's good, okay, good. So, but it wasn't like he's got to meet him. But when he saw him, he wanted to meet him. And I remember him asking Brock, he said, what do you want to do when you get out of college? Brock's answer, I want to be an entertainer. And I think this probably got an erection. You know, it was like, hey, utopia. Here's 6'3", 285, blonde hair, blue-eyed Greek god, you know, Norwegian swordsman, whatever, you know, what the hell is there not to like?
Mm-hmm.
And he had presence. Still got presence. But my point is, we have to, the WWE's got to make sure that they continue to send Briscoe out there and find more Brock Lesnar types.
Yeah.
And then the same thing could be said of going, if I'm going to hunt for those big fish, I'm going to go to deep water. There's a lot of deep water in the football world.
I think one thing that we've learned from all the great examples you just gave, Jim, and the backstories to each of them, going all the way back to CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, for instance, and the guys who William Regal were recruiting, Cesaro, the fewer rules you have, the better, in terms of preconceptions of what you're looking for. Who would have predicted that the ringmaster would be the next big thing and the guy to completely tilt in favor? It wasn't the only factor, but it was a primary factor. You were part of it. The Rock was part of it. Mick Foley, DX. There were a lot of factors. Hey, Vince Russo was part of the process of tilting the scales to WWF's favor in the war with WCW. But Steve Austin wasn't a predictable lead babyface character for Vince McMahon's style of promoting. And that's the part that I think has been kind of frustrating for all of us watching the Daniel Bryan situation, is Daniel Bryan doesn't fit the predictive look and appeal that Vince McMahon thinks should work. Obviously, Brock Lesnar, as you said, fit that mold. But when fans react to somebody the way they did Stone Cold or the way that they did Daniel Bryan, you want to put the machine behind them. And they did put the machine behind Steve Austin, and he was a beer-drinking, middle-finger-raising, black tights, black boots, no long blonde hair, and not 6'5", full of muscles.
Yeah.
He was different than Vince wanted from Hulk Hogan and thought Lex Luger could be. Daniel Bryan wasn't. Were you frustrated, or do you see the argument and see some validity in it, which is, yeah, the fans are cheering Daniel Bryan, but we are so sure that he's not the right person to build around that we're not going to put the machine behind him. In fact, we're going to just make a storyline out of all the things that are wrong with him because fans will sooner or later notice. I've been frustrated by that. I understand there's another point of view. Where do you fall on that? And help us understand the mentality in WWE that doesn't embrace Daniel Bryan with the type of crowd reaction he got last summer, but they did embrace Steve Austin. Was it just because they had competition and were less desperate?
I don't, you know, I don't know the, it was frustrating. Yes. I just always thought that, they're going to make the people wait a little bit more to see if this marginal sized guy is going to have some staying power. Hence the slow burn, you know, I did a podcast and I got a lot of response. So it's like making love, you know. It's not all about the climax. It's about the process and the foreplay and the whole nine yards. And that's probably a crass way of doing it, but that's, you can do what you want on your own podcast.
Well, don't apologize too much because Bruce has used that analogy before too. And
well,
his audio, so.
That's what it is. When you work in a territory days where you had 16, 18 guys on a roster, and you got a top heel and you got a top baby face, the good bookers would book them to build where you were dying to see them wrestle each other. Slow burn, slow build. When you knew that was going to be your match, you know, when I was working for Watch, you know, we'd go, we had tent poles that we'd book too, like, it was generally the Superdome, the big shows, or it was that Christmas week. Thanksgiving night in the Superdome, Christmas holidays, the Christmas night going forward to New Year's. And so we had different, and then the big show in the summertime around the 4th of July area is when the kids are out of school in the Superdome. So we had all these destinations that we knew where we needed to do big things. So what we perceived, and he perceived, and I had learned from was what is our best match? What's going to draw the most money? And then he'd pencil those in, those dates. And then he would work backwards to them. And obviously, you can get midway through the build and find out maybe your judgment was wrong, or the guy gets hurt, or he goes crazy on you, whatever, and you have to change. That's why the eraser is the most powerful weapon in wrestling. You get the eraser out, put somebody else in. Hmm. But the issue of Daniel Bryan was frustrating, I think, for a lot of people because they never thought that he was going to get made whole. And I thought all along that he was going to be have this moment. And I also thought all along, if I was booking it, his moment would have been at WrestleMania. Not at SummerSlam, not the Royal Rumble, WrestleMania. That's where he is the crowning achievement. And I visualized the going off the air with 70,000 or so fans in the Yes chant. That was a moment you could almost, it's so easy to see for me. But I could see where people just didn't have patience. The patience were getting thin, growing thin, because of how he was booked. But I thought all along, they're not going to continue to give this guy this much TV time if they don't have confidence that he's going to be the guy at some point. You don't put people on, that's what guys say all the time, well, how come so-and-so has got heat with The Office? You know, somebody's not got a push. But they're still on TV every week. Well, you know, common sense will tell you if the office didn't like somebody, they wouldn't be on television every week. And if they didn't like them enough, they wouldn't be in the company.
I think the argument with the Daniel Bryan push, and I know you shared some of the frustration watching it, was that it wasn't a binary choice where it was either on or off. Either they loved Daniel Bryan or they hated him, because if they hated him, they would have released him. Or they would have had him doing jobs. He wasn't at the Dolph Ziggler level of a guy they kind of lost faith in or put on the back burner. He was there, but he was being positioned to be the number 4 or 5 babyface at WrestleMania 30. It was Batista being rejected and CM Punk walking out that opened the door to this happy ending for Daniel Bryan. But that was not the master plan. Their master plan was Bryan against Sheamus or something along those lines, with Punk against Triple H and Batista being crowned the heroic, muscular 6'5 guy.
I don't know that to be true, though. I don't know that to be accurate. I mean, it's an interesting philosophy, and your argument has is plausible. Okay, I'm not denying that for you.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that I always believed the weekly interaction with Triple H and the where he was positioned as this anti, the company didn't, the authorities didn't want him. It got to be a little Austin-esque for me as far as the anti-establishment. The establishment was against him. Austin was against the establishment.
Yeah.
But the equation became the same deal, conflict between wrestler and ownership. And so I thought that with all this interaction with Daniel Bryan and the authority was tipping me off that this thing's going to have a hell of an ending. Because at the end of the day, you know, the great thing about it is at the end of the day, no matter what we look at, Vince is not forgotten. At the end of the day, the babyface got to go over. Period. At the end of the day, at the end of the program. Now, Daniel Bryan's going to lose the title at some point, obviously. And if I were booking, he'd lose it to Brock Lesnar. And then Brock Lesnar would probably would try to orchestrate something. I even suggested on one of my little rants in my podcast that I would get Roman Reigns ready to win. He'd win the Royal Rumble, and then he would wrestle Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 31 in Santa Clara and become the WWE World Champion.
Yeah.
Because you can use Brock Lesnar's part-time status and his great animal magnetism and charisma to anoint someone. It's going to be hard under that scheduling circumstance for him to be a long-term champion, like for a year or something. And that's another issue about the business. They pass around the and I've said it before, and I regret even saying it, that the titles are props, and I'm pissed that I said that.
I didn't
because maybe I was too wrapped up in how the procedures of the business were, and I should have. But it might be a prop to some people, but it really truly is something more important than that within the confines of the business. I don't like all these regular title changes. And I think the issue that, well, Flair's a 16-time champion or whatever it is, 13, 15, I don't know how many, there's a lot. Well, if you think about it, is that really a great compliment? Or is it a fact that if he's a 16-time champion, he's no longer the champion, he's also a 16-time loser?
So right.
At what point is it complimentary to how many times you held the title? Now, I say it's a hell of a lot more impressive that what San Martino did or what Backlund did or even late in the modern era what CM Punk did than it is to be a multiple-time champion. And just my take on it. So that's kind of that's how I look at that deal. But Daniel Bryan's going to have to – He'll pass the belt to somebody else at some point, but I hope it's not soon. It could happen in November at the Survivor Series, theoretically, let's say. It could happen early as SummerSlam, which probably is where the betting money will go. Or maybe he's going to work with somebody else and get another signature win before. Well, you got to do something with Lesnar. What's Lesnar hanging around for? I'm saying he's hanging around logically to be the world champion. And that's a good promo for Heyman to do. But he's still working like a rugged babyface, not a heel.
Yeah.
Lesnar's got no retreat. He doesn't cheat. And then he say, well, JR, you're talking in riddles. How can he cheat? There are no rules.
Yeah.
What's he gonna do? He's not gonna break on five, so he gets disqualified for not breaking the hold. Those things are so obscure. People forget there's a five count.
Yeah.
When I used to referee, my deal was when I refereed, I was instructed to say, you must break on four. This is when you actually had the wrestlers would come to the middle of the ring and you give them instructions.
From different locker rooms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they would come in the ring and they'd come together in the center of the ring and you'd give them their instructions.
Yeah.
You got 10 count on the floor. Because the old bookers wanted the audience to hear.
Yeah.
They thought they were eavesdropping.
Yeah.
You got you got a 20 count on the outside, or a 10 count, let's say, whatever it was, and if you're not back in the ring, fully in the ring by your 10 count, you've lost. You got to break a hold on four because I'll disqualify you on five. There were rules, and he said it. He didn't say it so loud that you were being obnoxious, but you said it loud enough that the guys that are on the first row or two could hear you.
Yeah.
And so they knew it was an athletic contest, and you check their tights and check their shoes and any foreign substances, blah, blah, blah.
A lot of what UFC does today. They've got somebody who checks them to make sure their mouthpiece is in and make sure that they're wearing their cup. And then in the ring, you got the ref instructions. And, wrestling is a portrayal, a dramatized, theatrical portrayal of a fight. Why would you leave certain things out that are characteristic that add drama to the real fights that are part of the storytelling?
I don't have an answer. My take on it is I don't agree with it. And if I'm going to be called an old fart and grumpy or grouchy or whatever, a lot of people look at my picture and say, well, JR's a grouchy bastard because he's not smiling without knowing why I'm not smiling.
Right.
So, and be that as it may. So I'm just saying that the fundamental aspect of the business is something that you can go back to, and it doesn't make you, even if in Vince's view, I don't want to be in the wrestling business. Ted Turner wanted to be in the wrestling business. I want to be in the entertainment business. But the entertainment aspects of drama and intrigue. Hey, I might have done this on my podcast. I write so much and do so much stuff, it runs together. I said, if I were WWE or any other wrestling promotion, I would have a ranking system. And I would have the top 10 contenders for the world title.
Yeah.
Somebody sent me a tweet today that said that I did a match between Ric Flair and Bobby Eaton. And Bobby Eaton at the time was the number 3 ranked contender for Flair's title. And even though Bobby Eaton didn't have a hot run as a babyface, he was a magnificent performer, as we all seem to know, but he was number 3. Well, when you got the champion versus the number 3 guy, we're used to that terminology in our everyday life. We're used to that. So it gives us a sense of reality and realness. So
it's like the IC tournament did. It resembles the NCAA tournament.
Exactly. And, and when USC has a guy fighting and you got number 3 against number 5, I perceive the rankings to be I got a good fight here. Hey, this is two top 5 guys.
Yep.
And the winner is invariably going to probably move up in the rankings. It's just when you have a college football game, you got Oklahoma's playing Texas, and they're both in the top 5. There's no doubt in anybody's mind that the loser's going to drop and the winner's going to ascend.
It's about ramifications. Fans will pop for near falls when they think a fall, a pinfall, a submission, actually will make a difference to the future of those wrestlers' careers, as opposed to just be blowing off as the announcers, pivot to plugging something, some electronic gadget or new app or something like that. But Vince McMahon and Triple H aren't, I don't know, is Triple H a sports guy? Does he have a sport or a team? Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
And Vince doesn't, to my knowledge. They have they both have strong work ethics and they hit the gym hard, but they're not, I don't know if they're anti-sports fans. I don't think they are anti. I just don't think that's their passion. And,
that shows through, they can. I'm sure their eyes glaze over if they overhear you talking like you are to us, to somebody else, because you've learned long ago probably not to talk to Vince at Triple H about, the sports-like aspects and incorporating it into wrestling that, you hit your head against that wall too many times. But I bet their eyes just glaze over. Ah, there's good old JR talking sports again. Like, that counts over here. And, it is philosophically different, but it's too bad because it is something that I think and you think and Bruce thinks works really well in the genre of pro wrestling when it's presented in a way that works the best. Forget about wrestling versus sports entertainment versus whatever. It's just that's what you're tapping into as a wrestling promoter, and I don't think Bonnie Hammer apparently gets that either, but wrestling fans, you're tapping into the sports aspect that draws people in.
Yeah, I think that's what has drawn most of us to the genre to begin with the athleticism and the good versus the evil. And, hey, look, I understand that John Wayne was never a cowboy or he wasn't in the military, but he was one of my heroes because that's how he was cast on, and they always had great villains for him to play off of that he ended up conquering in virtually every movie he was in, except when Bruce Dern shot him in the back in the Cowboys. And Bruce Dern was one of the great all-time movie villains, and he had a hard time. He was so effective as that heel in that movie that he had a hard time getting non-heel roles in his, subsequently in his career. He got stereotyped.
Boy, were people mad.
As a bad guy.
Boy, were people mad at that.
He
shot John Wayne in the back. That was a big deal.
And it was at the movies. Think about that.
Yeah.
Think about how ridiculous we were. I watched it last week. I think Turner Classic Movies had a John Wayne Film Fest on, and I watched that movie. And you know, I know the dialogue. I've seen it so many times. I still got pissed off. Bruce Dern. I knew it was coming. I think I even tweeted it out that if you want to see a heel, be a heel. After this commercial break is the showdown with John Wayne and Bruce Dern, where John Wayne beats him in a fair fight. Well, this is like a school book. He beats him in a fair fight, rugged, after selling and selling and selling. He finally makes his comeback, beats Bruce Dern by throwing his body against a tree, and then he walks away, the winner. He didn't hit him while he was down. He was done. John Wayne whipped his ass and left, walked away, and Bruce Dern takes somebody, gets a gun, and starts shooting. He wanted John Wayne to see him shoot him. He shot him in the leg, shot him in the arm. Now he's got color. And he's wounded, and then he gets mortally wounded with a third or fourth shot. So it was played out perfectly. It was directed perfectly. Great booking. Great. Everybody had their role down, and that's what a heel does. He lost a fair fight, and he cheated to gain an unfair advantage, and he eliminated his opposition by cheating. And that's in a fist fight, he used a gun. That's cheating in my book.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects, and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. No!